Welcome to the UFO File Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
This is Jerry Pippin, and this is UFO Files, and of course we're broadcasting from Eureka Springs, Arkansas. It's springtime, but I don't know. It's pretty cold here in the Ozarks. It's once again a pleasure to have Jim Sparks with us. Jim, of course, with the Keepers, a great book, and we have a link to where you can get that book. In fact, Jim, you have a new website. Let's welcome to the show, and let's talk about that first.
Well, it's great to be on the show. Excuse me. And thanks for the opportunity to talk about the website. It's pretty basic now. It's been under.
You're going to have to get a little closer into the microphone. Okay. Okay, Jim, we're picking it up right there. That's
okay.
Great.
It's been pretty basic. It's been under construction, so it's still kind of raw, but you can go on to it. It's jim-sparks.com. So we're just starting it up. I'm supposed to tell you we're just starting up, particularly the people that are running it for me, so you don't think it's going to be the whole thing. And also, it's an opportunity to pick up a book over there if you want to.
So when you say dash, it's a little hyphen there.
Yes.
Not a period or not a dot. A hyphen.
A dash, right. Jim Sparks was taken somehow for some
reason. It's a fairly common name. Like, I'm lucky my name's a little weirder, so I grabbed JerryPippin.com fairly easily.
Right.
In our last broadcast, we talked in great detail about the contacts and how it went on. Here you talked a little bit about the rainforest issue.
Correct. Uh-huh.
And we'll get into that in a minute. But I've got to discuss this whole general area of the climate. It's pretty lousy here.
Yeah.
And as you know, there were tornadoes everywhere, and there's a northeasterner coming into Maine and New York. And
right.
They give you a clue about what's happening with the environment?
Well, I'm happy in one respect. I'm sad about, of course, global warming, but I'm happy primarily happy in the fact that there's an acute awareness of it where there wasn't quite as strong as it was before. So that's a very positive thing in that respect. My assignment, so to speak, has been primarily the rainforest. I didn't ask for that, but throughout the abduction experiences and then as we were...
In our previous broadcast, and it's still available on our website if people want to go over and listen to it, in Laughlin, you were telling me that they made you more or less a little bit of a platoon leader or something.
Well, it would seem that way. It's kind of strange. What can one single person really do? So it takes all of us to do it.
Uh-huh.
So all I can do is relate to folks, interaction, the things I experienced, what I saw, and things that in a sense being told. And when I say my assignment is the rainforest, no, I don't pretend to be single-handedly to attempt to say here.
In other words, you didn't go up to an ET in a uniform and they said, Jim Sparks, this is your assignment. You just kind of got, how did you get that?
Well, you know how it really happened was.
Okay, I want to know.
I didn't expect this. And it burned in my brain for 3 days, so I had no choice. It was an abduction experience that was not the typical. It wasn't uncommon for these guys to, as I mentioned earlier, they create a field that renders all kinds of technical abilities, one of which is to walk through walls, invisibility, and things of that nature. When they abduct you and one does walk through a wall and through a yard, into the woods, into a craft. But in this case, a few years ago, it was a gray, and he had came through the a glass window, and I saw him, and I thought, okay, here's another, I'm being escorted to go. But in this scenario, projected in a hologram form was from as far as my right eye can see, center vision, all the way as far as the left that I can see, was one patch of rainforest burning after the next. So it went from like the right to the center all the way to the left. And I could see live these
things burning.
This
is like a movie screen. You know.
Yes.
Kind of like the old Cinerama, where they had the three screens,
yeah,
a big wide screen.
Exactly. You
uh-huh.
could say it was like that.
Uh-huh.
The vividness was, it wasn't exactly crystal clear where you could see color. It was more in grays and fire, but you could see the fire. But what made it unique was, well, why are you showing me this? And the response telepathically back was simply, stop, put out the fire, put out the fire, put out the fire. So I knew that that had something to do with me. Clearly they were saying that to me. But however, what made it fascinating was whenever I closed my eyes, all I could see was live visions or holograms, so to speak, like you were saying, with my eyes closed, and that lasted for 3 days and three nights. So every time I went to sleep, I couldn't get this away from my side.
In other words, it was a vivid dream.
Dream,
only
or
it was there.
It was there. Even if I closed my eyes consciously, it would be there. So I pretty much picked up at that point that because there a lot of these abductions are mass abductions, a lot of people lose conscious memory of it, but it's burned in their subconscious and their environmental issues. You know, the planet's in trouble, and to save the planet and do what you can. So my area became, I knew at that point, was the rainforest, and it sort of developed from there. Well, it did develop from there.
And you live far from the rainforest. You live in Las Vegas.
That's correct.
So is there a move coming up?
Is there a what?
A move. Up? Are you going to move?
As it takes me, whatever's necessary. Yes, it's possible.
I got. We're going to go to the audience and get some questions here in about 30 seconds, but I got to follow up one thing about the rainforest. What are you doing right now about the rainforest? I mean, you're aware that you're supposed to do something.
Right.
So have you started doing something yet?
Yes. I've been tight-lipped about I talk about this a little bit, but I don't get into too much detail. I've been tight-lipped about it because I like to know what the plan is relative to what I'm associating with.
We talked about this in Laughlin. There's a time and a place for everything.
That's right.
And you're just following, I guess, your intuition or maybe ET instructions, or I don't know how you'd phrase it.
It's actually direct, and I'm a little shy about saying words like I was shown or I was directed because it doesn't go down well when I even say it myself. But in retrospect, that's basically what it is. So I wait. In the early years, I would go forward in things like this, and I found myself coming to brick walls because I knew the timing wasn't right. So I've learned through interaction, when the timing's right, I see certain things, certain signs, plus what the telepathic communication says, it's the time to do certain things. I've been tight-lipped about any specific plan for the rainforest until I knew exactly what that would be in detail so I could write about it or speak about it or interview about it now.
Now, we have a lady here from close to my hometown. You're from Fort Gibson, right?
Yes.
Oklahoma.
Yes.
And I'm in Muskogee, Oklahoma, my hometown. And your name?
Sarah.
And you have a question for Jim? You're going to have to speak up because he can hardly hear. We've got a lot of noise here.
Well, Jim, I'm curious. You have had these experiences, and so I'm wondering, and you seem to be of the common man. And
right.
If this issue is so dire and important, and I've watched Al Gore's movie, liked the movie, and he's a very high-profile person dealing with one of the same issues. And I'm wondering how come, if this is such a high-level agenda for extraterrestrials or whomever this is, then why not get more of these people in such high-level places that governments do not ignore it, or that corporations, or that lust and greed for money, those type of people, are they being focused on in these abduction scenarios so that they will deal with this in a much more appropriate way?
Well, I believe exactly what you said makes 100% sense. However, what had taken place in the last several years is the fact that they have contacted people, individuals on a global basis in power. They have contacted leaders, which, of course, is not public information. We know how everything's covered up. Agreements were made. Certain technologies were given to aid in this direction, and unfortunately the human nature, and even in power, made weapons with these things and also made money with these things. So I'm seeing this, from what I'm interacting with and what I know to be so from interaction, as a process. It's like due process, due diligence, meaning the first thing you're supposed to do is work with world leaders. So, and unfortunately, in a lot of areas, that has failed. So what's your next step? Your next step would be the common person, the average person, as you said. Myself as the average person, and what are the rest of us on this globe?
In other words, Jim, you're basically saying that the ET agenda here on this particular issue is they went to the powers that be. The powers that be turned out to be more interested in greed and power and creating the technology that they didn't want to use it for originally. In other words, they made weapons, et cetera, et cetera. So you're saying they kind of went to the grassroots level.
That's exactly right. You got it right on the head. And I think what's kind of neat about it, because the power play that I get to watch on the side and I think is kind of slightly humorous to me, is I like to shuffle, meaning that whenever agreements are broken between high power level and ETs, I like to see when they go to the common person and watch them sweat a little bit on the
higher level. Right,
yeah,
right.
It's kind of interesting to me in a positive way.
Hey, can you give me an example of watching something like that happen?
Well, you got to remember, I'm not. My calling is not to point fingers at particular situations.
Okay.
It keeps me going. You know.
Well, it's a radio show. I'm trying to get to a little stuff.
Well, I can
here.
Say this.
Okay.
The amnesty thing is important. I'm not sure if we talked about it the last time on the amnesty bill or the amnesty for those in the know.
No, we didn't get into it much.
Okay. There are extraterrestrials, particularly Greys, have been interacting on this planet now for thousands, if not tens of thousands of years. They've been coming and going. A few have had the privilege to know of their presence, and it's been that way since almost day one. They'll go through all kinds of trouble just to be not known. Okay. However, we're reaching a point on the planet, as we're discussing, where it's the environment is dangerous. So personal agendas for them, agenda and involving us, and of course for us to survive. So in that process, What has happened since the deterioration of the environment, there is interaction at certain different levels, and this is all going to make sense in a second. Interaction
okay.
meaning like we've got deep secret black operations, black ops.
Okay.
Those people actually interact with ETs, and they're human beings interacting with ETs that have technologies that will make a difference on this planet. We'll change the face of the globe as we know it. Free energy, non-pollution energy, the ability to travel from point A to point B, all the necessary technologies so we don't have to drive our needs in this planet suffer so much.
You don't get stranded in the Ozarks an extra day because of the weather.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, of course, this stuff is secret. In the past, and for thousands of years, these kind of technologies, of course, have been in the hands of ET. So now you've got the black op, and they've got the technologies. Now, why are these things not coming out? Well, in essence, the reason has been for national security and to protect the United States, and, of course, other governments that keep this thing secret do the same thing. But what they've had to do in the interest of national security is what the problem is. Because as we know in this business, if we can call this business, that you have individuals who have been discredited. Let's talk just in the last 60 years have been discredited.
Right.
We have individuals by the thousands, unfortunately, probably more, who have been maimed. And most unfortunately, we have individuals who've lost their lives for keeping this secret.
Right.
So there are those. There's more of a push because I have had interaction with not just ET, but Black Op, both of them working together. The majority, or getting close to be the majority, in my sight and what I could see, want to expose this kind of technology in order to straighten out a lot of the problems we're having on this globe. And to finally give the human species a chance to evolve. There's technologies for an advantage that extraterrestrials have on us, in particular Greys, and what are commonly referred to as reptilians, is the fact that they have extremely long life spans. As far as I can tell, I don't think they even die. They go on for thousands of years. Can they be killed? Yes. Can they be hurt? Yes. But is it a natural cause of death? No. Did it take technology to get them there? Yes. The problem with the human species is that our lifespan is too short. What do we live? Anywhere from 50 to 100 years. In most cases, about the time that we start to understand something, it's time to die.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, being an older guy.
Well, yeah, I'm feeling the same way. Yeah.
And the term is that we use is, boy, if I'd just known this 30 years ago.
Exactly. And then we pass these things on, Jerry. We pass them on to our siblings. We pass them on to our children. But what do they really absorb? If there are several parents out there, I'm sure, if you could at least pass of what you've learned in life 20 or 30% of what you know to your child, you've done well. True. But the majority of them are going to take the other 70% that you told them about and find out for themselves.
That's true. That's the way it goes.
And the percentages may be more or less.
I think you're probably right on, Jim. You're kind of wise about that. This is Jerry Pippin. We're at the end of the Ozarks in Eureka Springs. It's spring, but only by the calendar. It's still winter here. We'll be back with Jim Sparks. The name of the book is The Keepers, and it's jim-sparks.com.
Correct.
Don't go away. We'll be right back.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast walkers, UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers, now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com.
This is Jerry Pippin. We're at the end of the Ozarks, and Jim Sparks is our guest. The name of the book is The Keepers, and this is only one specimen. Race, specimen, what would we call them?
Species.
Okay. They like to be called species?
That's been the best word so far.
Okay.
No booze on that one.
And I believe you told me in Laughlin that your experience was reptilians weren't really bad.
As far as my interactions have been concerned, and for almost 19 years.
And we kind of think of reptilians because of the fact that reptilians happen to be snakes and frogs and things like alligators, where you're from in Florida. And this is where this all happened to you, right?
Primarily in Florida and Texas.
We're in Texas.
In Houston area.
Okay.
That's where it was all stemmed from, actually, was the Houston area.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, from N88, early mid-88 is where primarily it all started. Texas was the first 18 months in Texas was like the most heavy duty of it all, because that's when I was slammed with this stuff dead on consciously without even knowing.
Now, was this where you were married at the time?
Yes.
And this caused a breakup of your first marriage, I think.
It didn't help.
Yeah.
Did not help.
And is she still being contacted, do you think?
Well, what I've learned about Teresa, and I can say her name, and she's okay with it. We're very close. We're good friends, dear friends. Who knows? Maybe down the road.
I have an ex-wife, right? So I understand. It's not all bitterness after a while.
Not at all. But it took some time.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, Teresa's way of dealing with this that I've respected and I've stayed away from, her way of coping is denial. And so for many, many years, when she knew what was going on, a lot of this was going on, and she just had to deny it in order to cope. So I was kind of stubborn with that the first year and a half, quite frankly, and it caused a lot of problems in that respect.
But let's let the lady from Fort Gibson ask one more question here.
Yes, my question is, if you, I know that there are forces in the government or in the world that we're living in that have that are suppressing what you feel like has been given to you as an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And there are consequences, there could be consequences, although maybe the rainforest is not so political a topic as, say, free energy.
Right.
Okay. What are the consequences of ignoring what you seem to feel like you have been given as a mandate or as your job from extraterrestrials? And have you ever ignored it? And have you ever moved past through that? And I know that probably took some time in your life.
Yeah, that's a good
so
question.
In other words, I think you're asking about personal consequences, right?
Right.
To Jim himself.
To Jim, to the environment, okay. to you personally, and how have you moved forward through that?
Well, speaking of the environment, that these technologies need to be fleshed out, and I think I know how we can do it, and we can get into specifics a little bit, which is the amnesty. As far as myself personally is concerned, I went through, I would say, in the first 6 years, the non-cooperative attitude and ways about myself. If you know the story, I hated their guts. All I wanted to do was kill them. If I had any opportunity in that first 6 years to squeeze their fat heads off their skinny little necks, I would have done it. I was primarily paralyzed during all the abduction scenarios, which were there were several hundred, literally, within the first 6 years. So I went through what I call an alien boot camp, so to speak, in that first six-year period. What elated me at the end of 6 years was the first time I was not paralyzed, I was involved, and now I got to see an agenda, because I was always on board in this one room, on board all the time during all this, on the gurneys, the semen extraction, the experiments, forced to learn the symbols and all these things, not knowing what the hell the plan was or what they were doing. But when I was first free, it was a massive, we got pulled or abducted to, and I've told this story, in an empty field, clearing in the woods. And it was a mass abduction, and it was an environmental abduction, meaning that there were several hundred people in a huge, humongous area on board this ship that were placed in front of monitors, and we were seeing the condition of the planet in pristine, clear beauty from maybe hundreds or thousands of years ago, something that everything that came up on that monitor, for lack of a better definition, a monitor, took your breath away. And then we slowly saw these things deteriorate as to where we are today, and the message was clear, you're killing your planet. Not that we don't know this, but it was to make us know that there's something else involved here that wants to do something about it. So when it went from this radical horror, military boot camp type thing, or which I call an alien boot camp type thing, to this, in a sense, bliss to see a plan and to be a part of it, my whole attitude turned around 100%. From me seeing them as a screwed up enemy with total chaos and not comprehending anything they were doing, because they're not human. Let's remember that. We're talking about non-human intelligence. They don't interact the same. They're very to the point, and for all the other reasons I've said, they're telepathic, their brains think 10 to 100 times faster and so forth. And then the elation of seeing a plan. So I don't even think for a second of not wanting to cooperate when it comes to the same place that I have to live in, you have to live in as a human being. I have to live here. If something's about to aid this planet, then I want to go for that. So I have no reason not to. Now, I don't claim to embrace alien culture. I'm not going to hug them and say, you're my brother, and hello, space brother, and all this, and sister, and
well,
so forth.
Well, we run across people who do that,
yeah.
And I always thought that was a little naive. But maybe the hostility you had the first 6 years is a little too far the other way.
Right, it was. But nonetheless, it's a healthy...
I mean, it's kind of the human condition, I think. I think that's kind of the way we behave. You mentioned the military-type boot camp. I've never asked you this before, Jim. These ETs, you know, you see pictures of grays... do these ETs have uniforms or clothes, or they run around naked?
You know, I've been asked that a lot on this trip.
Yeah, well, hey, you know.
It's hard for me. It's difficult as far as the grays are concerned, which are the true aliens.
How about the reptilians?
No, not that hard. What I mean is I should answer that. I kind of answered it wrong to answer that. But it's hard to distinguish clothes because it's when you look at their face and you look at their neck, you don't see a line like a shirt line or anything like that. It starts blending in together. So one is led to believe that if there's a material there, it's extremely thin and body fit. So I can't see a difference. So you could just as well say they look naked as well as they have something that's extremely thin.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the reptilians are concerned, they're scaled from top to bottom, man. There's no doubt that there isn't any kind of material on them.
So
these are the ones that I'm only
fashion designers don't make a lot of money.
Sometimes I see some of these pictures, and then you might think that they do, but yeah, I haven't seen them personally.
Okay, you haven't seen anything like
no.
that. The other thing,
Excuse me.
You were telling me this story, and you told me the story in Laughlin, and they can hear it on their other interview as well, on demand anytime on the website. Is the fact, did you see emotions from these ETs? I think you mentioned fear one time. You saw a little fear from somebody.
Well, talking about the grays first.
Yeah.
Different types, but first I should address the fact that as far as anybody, normal person would be concerned, you would see, even after all these years, what would be perceived to be zero emotions. If there were emotions, they would be an emotion that I don't understand. But however, there has been exception. Here's the exceptions. I've seen at one point an extreme. This is grays, and I'll talk about the what are commonly referred to as reptilians. As far as the grays are concerned, at one point I saw an extreme cynical sense of humor, and I don't think I'll ever forget that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, during the periods when go ahead, sir.
No, that's fine. A little dry humor from them, huh?
It was. It was kind of sick too.
Yeah.
But it caught me off guard. I didn't expect it. I had during those early years, it was always punishment reward. That's the way it worked, to learn something whether you wanted to learn it or not. Punishment reward. Now, when you cooperated well and you did the puzzles well and all the things, the emotional experiments and the medical experiments and all the things they did with you, there was a little reward session. And sometimes those reward sessions were something rare, which would be you get to ask a question. Half the time they might answer it in a riddle that wouldn't make any sense, and the other half the time you might get a direct answer. So I asked a question. I decided I was going to be scientific, and I asked, what is faster than the speed of light? Now, wouldn't you think that's a pretty good question?
Yeah.
Okay. So a hologram.
They got here somehow.
Yeah, right. I'm waiting for this, like, cool answer, right?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Here's where the cynicism came in. It makes sense out of what this joke is, but I'll just show you what they demonstrated. They demonstrated in a hologram form my face with, on both sides of my head, a face, was a musket-type rifles, flintlock.
Okay.
With the musket balls already, like you could see the spark and the smoke had already released
on
both sides.
They were on their way toward your head.
Right, and two musket balls towards my head. So mm-hmm. that was like the closest thing to emotion and a sense of humor in a response to that question, which they weren't going to tell me. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
But we're not telling you that, but here's what, like a joke almost, which was a cynical sense of humor. This is faster than the speed of light. So mm-hmm. take it for what you think it's worth.
Well, they need new joke writers.
I would say. I didn't think it was funny. Actually, I got pretty mad. And in fact, for several weeks afterwards, when I got pulled, I didn't cooperate very well because I didn't think that was a funny thing. Now I laugh. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah.
When you're well, they had to. Well, you know, I've dealt with comedy all my life. It's only funny if you know the culture,
yeah, right?
And the surprise element, isn't it?
Exactly.
Or the ridiculous
exactly.
element of it.
Right.
And so I guess you've been acclimated now.
Yeah, oh yeah. Now it's hilarious to me because I picture it because I can see like the funny look on my face and the musket balls going, okay, that's faster than light. At the time, you're horrible.
Well, I wonder if they have a place like where you live, Las Vegas someplace.
Do they have a place there?
Yeah, like that. What do they do for entertainment?
It could be underground, possibly.
You know, a lot of them here, underground?
No, I'm just saying that.
Okay.
Because we know about the bases, Area
right.
51 and the underground
things
in Nevada,
right.
So there could be tunnels
well,
in
Well, I wasn't
Vegas,
thinking about particularly in Nevada for them. I was thinking about, what do the ETs do for entertainment?
Well,
do they, I mean,
there is.
They live longer, but it doesn't seem like
They're enjoying life like us.
Well, you know, these are things I'm learning, and there is reward sessions that, if you want me to go into that, I can go into one in particular.
Yeah, I'd like to.
It's not going to sound comfortable to anybody because it's going to sound very bizarre and queer.
That's even better.
They do work, and you do have they do work. And at the end of, because I've been at times hours and hours and hours, which have extended over 24-hour periods in some pullings, most of them only a couple hours long. But what I've seen is after, as it was punishment and reward for me for cooperating, I've seen reward sessions after 10 or 12 hours of them working straight where, look, this is something I know they can do. We radiate energy all the time, and it just goes out into space, meaning that if you're angry, that energy of anger just radiates out and goes nowhere.
Right.
They can actually pick it up and contain it, almost like within a container,
a
battery. This is high tech, but they do it. They can contain, at the same token, the air of leadership. You know, when somebody walks into a room and they have sort of they can actually store that kind of energy. That this is something they do for bartering purposes, and that's a fact.
So they literally are out there feeding on our energy.
Yes, they are. So they're not eating our face, and they're not cutting into our bodies and dissecting us for this stuff. It's stuff we radiate naturally. Now, they do prompt people who have all these extra emotions to expel even more. So they have, it's like mining.
Oh, they get a kick out of it.
Well, they just get more product. Oh,
they'd love our producer, Roberta Scott. She's very histrionic.
There you go. So then there's the sexual energy, and this is the stuff that I knew
I
you would really
about,
enjoy.
No, I want to hear about this.
It was weird and queer to me, and I didn't want to associate myself with it.
If Don Imus get fired, I might as well get fired now. Go ahead.
No, I won't go that far. However, sexual energy can be picked up and contained also. So here you have a container of intense sexual energy that can be released on the human body and also the gray body. So now you're bathing.
So those little grays are interested.
You're bathing in euphoria that doesn't end until they turn the switch off. So it's a reward session that everybody would want, you would think. Never-ending, the euphoria of sexual energy.
Sure.
So, in answering your question, that's an area that I see that's the closest thing in a perverted way, or depending on how you look at it, I think it's the future. I really think it's the future. I had to get over a lot of things that I could not be comfortable with personally. And like, oh, that's sick. What's wrong with you people? Well, after you're exposed to it year after year after year, and you see it, and you see how they respond to it, you begin to realize that, hey, if a moment lasts 3 minutes,
saying,
what's wrong with an
saying,
hour?
good-looking blonde walks in a room, you radiate this sexual energy, and that's enough.
Yes.
That's it.
And it could last an hour, however long. And it's at the point, it's ecstasy. So
but they are, then they do have some sort of desires similar to humans.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Do they
in that
eat?
Respect, but they don't, I've never seen one eat. I've never heard one speak.
Interesting. But you know what they're thinking.
When they
speak to you.
There is an unfair advantage, which, bearing in mind that they do think 10 to 100 times faster, but there's an edge for people, meaning this. They know they can answer a question before you even ask it, and it's rather intimidating, like before you can even say anything, they know the answer.
Because I know what they're going to say, I think, but they're even worse.
It's a constant. It's a constant. However, their minds think so fast that you just can't take in all the data. It's like a hum, like a when they're with you. You just can't take it.
Have you watched them interact with each other? I guess they're doing this constantly.
They're mostly when they you don't usually see them face each other very often unless something radical happens, like a physical problem or something like that. Then they may look at each other real quick to take care of something. But generally, they're staring out this way or in other directions. They're not really looking. Boy, you're asking some really good questions. No one has ever asked me that.
Well, not too much
do they look at each other.
Well, we got some more questions we're going to ask you in a minute. Yeah. Maybe nobody's ever asked. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back. It's Jim Sparks. It's jim-sparks.com. We're from the end of the Ozarks in beautiful but cool Eureka Springs, Arkansas.
They sat together in the fire.